Hey, y'all. Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Andrew Baracco joins us today. Now, Andrew holds dual positions, one in academia and one in industry. He's a graduate student under Dr. David Byrne in the Horticultural Sciences Department at Texas A&M. And he's also the Director of Breeding and Production at the Antique Rose Emporium. Now, he's here to talk about the future of roses and how they fit into the lifestyle and culture of the millennial generation. Y'all stay with us. The Rose Chat Podcast starts now.
It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey, Andrew. Welcome to Rose Chat.
Hey, Teresa. Thanks for having me. It's a real honor.
Well, Andrew, we met last year at the Alan Owens Garden Symposium in Shreveport, and I was most impressed not only with your knowledge, but your enthusiasm for roses. Now, that's especially since you're quite a bit younger than many of us who are out speaking about roses.
Oh, well, yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've actually been I've been enthusiastic and passionate about roses till, about 2008, 2009, I'd say.
Great. Now, today we're going to talk about the future of roses and in particular, how that fits in with the millennials and what they might enjoy. And who's better to talk about that than you? So let's get started by your telling us a little bit about your work at the Antique Rose Emporium.
Sure, absolutely. My work at the Antique Rose Emporium, it really is a rose lover's or a rose hybridizer's dream job because my job is literally to, you know, hybridize roses and breed roses and cross-pollinate and select seedlings. And you would think that how can someone spend, you know, all day, every day on that? But it's actually quite a bit of involved work. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of roses and then thousands of possible combinations. And it's all about, you know, filling market niches and improving what's out there. You know, my work, we don't want to just stir the pot and, and, you know, release more of the same old, same old. We, you know, mm-hmm. I'm hybridizing roses to meet the future needs and, you know, really offer something that's, you know, different that people haven't seen before.
Well, I love that. Of course, I've been growing roses a very long time, but I get just as excited every year as I did when I first started growing of the new releases. So tell us about some of the new releases and what you're seeing.
Well, first of all, I definitely feel you on that because I also get excited about the new releases. You know, some of the most newer releases that I'm really excited about, quite honestly, are all these new Cordas releases. Especially the Sunbelt series and the Parfuma series. You know, I am out here every day walking the fields, you know, for several years now. And even before that, I would go to, you know, Texas, Louisiana, you know, wherever I would drive and go see all these other rose trial gardens. And I had noticed these, you know, these Cordas, they're really starting to gain popularity and traction. Cause you know, and I've monitored them in these trials and even at the fields here. And oh man, just, I would say, the Sunbelt series, like, Beverly, which actually I think that should be in the Parfuma series. It's so fragrant and, and Savannah as well. But, there's another one. It's called, Madame Anisette. That's another new release. It's, you know, it's kind of a bigger rose. So it might, it's kind of like got that climbing thing. It's not a climber, but it's just so big. It takes a little while to really get going and get started, before it blooms. But once it does, I mean, it's in one of the most clean and fragrant roses. And also its sister in the series, Summer Romance. So these are some new releases that I'm really impressed with. Summer Romance, Madame Anisette, Savannah, and Beverly. They also have a purple one called Plum Perfect, which is also extremely disease resistant and very beautiful color. If only it had fragrance, though. So that's what I'm using, trying to get some fragrance on Plum Perfect. But those are some really exciting new releases that I've seen.
Well, the thing about that is you're in Texas, and you mentioned Louisiana, and you're seeing these, and they're doing well. But you know they do very well in my Zone 5B garden. I've been testing them here for a long time. I have three Savannahs. I have Beverly. They're absolutely gorgeous. They're disease resistant and so fragrant. So,
right.
You know, that is one of the things that pleases all of us that love the rose is the fragrance and something that we're not going to have to keep spraying and spraying and spraying. So to have something that is, and good in several zones is just knocks it out of the park.
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah, you're right. If it can do well in the humidity down here, then that's a good sign. And you know what, Teresa, let me add that, you know, Ping Lim, so all the new releases by Ping Lim, he just always makes good stuff. So, I'm really excited about, his stuff. There's one that I've seen, True Sincerity. It looks like it's going to be a ketchup and mustard, but actually disease resistant. I'm still watching it in the trials, but, so the jury's out, but I'm really looking forward to that one. And there's a really other new one. It used to call Double 10, and it's got some other name now, but that's a really nice, beautiful orange.
Oh, it is beautiful. I've seen that one as well. Now I have several of his Easy Elegant series, and they're outstanding here. And so we haven't had the opportunity to buy the True Bloom series, which I think are the ones that you're referring to.
Yeah.
But they tell me they're going to be in the garden centers this year, but you know, with the pandemic, we have not been able to go see. So I am chomping at the bit to get out there. So I'm hoping that they're going to be released around here this year.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I'm even able to see them is having access to the Texas A&M trial gardens, you know, cause I'm still a student with Dr. Byrd. So that's also an interesting thing. We have a lot of interesting, like new commercial varieties in there as well.
Absolutely. Now, when last we talked, you mentioned the buck roses. Are you seeing any crosses with the buck roses?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think the buck roses are some of the most underrated roses as far as like a breeder's collection that are out there. In fact, I read a study. I think it came out either this year or last year, and I believe David Zlesak was in charge of that. I'm not sure, but they did a trial of all the buck roses in the South and. I'm totally not surprised they found one that was really, really perfect for especially the southern U.S. climates, and that was April Moon. And it's kind of an interesting story with April Moon. I discovered it when I started going to LSU as an undergrad, and I met Dr. Jeff Keeney. He's the director of the Burden Agricultural Center, the LSU Botanic Gardens. And he said, oh, well, you know, we had this old buck rose trial. It's been like 10 or 15 years, and it's just been like unkempt. It's just been abandoned. And so we went go check that out. And it was actually it had actually been totally leveled to the ground by some like forestry equipment or forest processing machine or something. And so everything was just taken to the ground. And, it's interesting when they did that and then they spread Roundup on top of it. All these different buck roses and some other roses as well. And get this, Teresa, guess what three roses came up after that harsh treatment? It was Belinda's Dream, Knockout, and April Moon.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that one, I dug up that April Moon plant. And I brought it to my house in Prairieville. And that same April Moon plant is the one that I have used to hybridize these past, 5 or 6 years. And we have a really, really promising seedling. It's not named yet. It's just got a code name, but it's April Moon crossed with a David Austin rose called Tess of Dubervilles.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose that one because that one also has survived in my, southern humid field garden with no spraying. And so I've kind of got, it kind of looks like Tess of Dubervilles, but more of the color of April Moon. So that's one, Mike and I are really excited about. But just quickly to finish up on that, I find that when I hybridize and mix the work of two different breeders, that's when I really get some interesting and really amazing results. Like, in my experience, you're not going to get good results if you just cross like a David Austin with a David Austin, or like a mm-hmm. Cordes with a Cordes, or buck with a buck. You know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been getting, I get amazing results. That's one of my biggest secrets. But it's not. It's really just it might just be common sense. But when I I mix like a buck with a David Austin, or a star disease resistant rose with like a Cordes, and then cross that to one of Mike's Pioneers. And so something like that. But the buck roses are a good complement to have in a breeding program.
One of my favorite is Quietness. I have 5 of those, I think, in my garden, and I buy it to give to people because here it does so well, and it's fragrant, and it's that pretty soft pink and not a lot of thorns. So it just makes it, pleasing to most everyone.
Yeah, Quietness is a great one. It's a great one. It's one of our top sellers, actually. It does well. Very upright, like always in bloom. I think on that one, though, it's they're not sure on Griffith Buck's notes. I think the parentage is uncertain on that one, but it sure would be nice to find out, because I agree, it is a great rose.
It is. Now, we've been talking about millennials, and it seems to me that they're very interested in gardening, but does that transfer over to rose gardening?
I really think it does. Even when I was a, upperclassman at LSU, for example, we had these new freshmen, coming into the horticulture program, young kids, and we would have the horticulture club meetings, and then have the professors would show up there, and they'd be trying to sell them on these certain certain random like pansies or something. And these young kids, basically, they're like, hey, we want to learn about roses. And that really surprised me, and another story I'll tell you is at the Darwin Perennials Day, and it was 2018. I went there representing Antique Rose Emporium, and I met a guy who was, he had to have been my age or younger, and started like asking me all these questions about the rose hybridizing and rose breeding program. And I was surprised. And this guy who was my age or younger started asking me if I was working on albas and making any new alba roses. And I was just totally floored that someone my age would even know about that, what that means. And actually I told him, yes, I am. Actually, this morning I removed the anthers on some alba semi-plena. So I'm going to do some pollinations.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Fragrance, beautiful, white, light pink. That'll be awesome. Andrew, I'm thinking about the rose societies that are filled with people with great information on growing roses. And so what tips could you give us on how to get that information in a way that is going to transfer to the millennials?
Well, Teresa, that's a very good question, but fortunately the answer is quite simple. They need to know is social media and YouTube, because millennials are all over Instagram, for example, and of course YouTube. YouTube is already so popular with everyone anyway. And Instagram as well. But people are always on their phones, especially millennials, and are always checking, you know, their apps. And a lot of times they can, you know, like on Instagram, you can follow a gardening hashtag and get a notification that, you know, someone has posted in that. And that would be a lot easier than sending out like a brochure or a flyer hoping that, you know, someone would see it, which they probably wouldn't. I think that's the key, is to use like social media and YouTube, because it's just a great way to reach out to not only millennials, but just but the public in general. I mean, there's so many gardening posts on Instagram, for example, of millennials, and they're doing stuff like, you know, tomatoes and peppers, which are quite popular, and I think they want to do roses, but they just, you know, there's that stereotype that they're so hard to take care of, which is understandable. But I think if via Instagram or some, you know, YouTube video, I don't know how this would work, but maybe even like TikTok, that also is another popular app, but, there are ways to do it, and it can be done.
Such good information, such good tips. And let me just say that if you can grow tomatoes, you can grow roses. Tomatoes are not that easy.
Yes. And you know what? A lot of millennials are growing tomatoes. So that's a good sign.
There you go. Now, you know, with our social distancing, we are all constantly on social media. We're using every app that we can find to stay close to people. So perfect time to learn new things.
Absolutely.
Now, our time is running short. We could talk all day, but I'm wondering, what would be a couple of your top tips for someone who's just getting started with roses?
Sure, that's a great question. I'll give a few of my top tips, the ones that are most important. I would say number one is don't overwater. You know, roses don't like wet feet. And, you know, I've seen so many roses, and, you know, and it's not from just millennials either. But, it, you know, other plants as well. You know, that's the, you know, the leading cause of death of plants is overwatering and underwatering. So really getting a grasp on that watering issue can go a long way. And what that means is it's better to do fewer but deeper waterings rather than having a drip hose on every day for 30 minutes, for example. Now, maybe if it's their first year in the first summer and it's very hot, they might need water a little bit more often. But by and large, you know, it's not that hard to monitor. And I think someone getting into roses, if they just learn how to water properly, that can go a long way. Number two, I would say, is whenever you plant it, don't dig like the big bowl on the ground if you have like hard clay soil, for example. What I do is, you know, we try to use as much of the native soil as possible. Sometimes that's not possible because the soil is just so poor, or you just are starting a new bed, or if it's a raised planter. But if the rose is going to be in the ground, I would try to use as much of the native soil as possible, because Texas A&M has done study after study that has proven that if we, you know, dig a hole like in clay and then fill it with like this Miracle-Gro garden soil, not only is it going to be like a big bowl of water where the roses can drown because it won't drain through clay as well, but the roots will also get spoiled. They'll get used to that, you know, soft, you know, nice, luxurious Miracle-Gro potting soil, and that they won't want to grow into the clay. You know, yeah, they, like I said, they did this study, and it was 5 years long, and they compared, and all the trees and shrubs that were planted in the native soil had these massive, very strong root systems because they had to get tough. They had to adapt. So and that applies to roses as well. So that would be my number two tip. And number three tip, I would say, is, you know, don't forget to, deadhead. Now, fortunately, a lot of the shrub roses that are popular and I think a lot of the Cordes roses and a lot of the new stuff comes out, like David Austin's, it's usually not going to have that many hips, but some roses that do set a lot of hips, you know, they're going to put the energy into that, and it's going to make them bloom less, and that can make people wonder, like, oh, what's wrong with my rose? Why isn't it blooming enough? And I would say either try to, if you're a beginner, get a rose that doesn't set hips, or just be diligent about deadheading. And what else can we say? I would say, you know, one of the biggest wet blankets in the spring is thrips. Thrips can really destroy all that roses have to offer as far as their beauty and the blooms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even systemic insecticides are really hard to, you know, treat that, because the rose blooms grow out faster than the insecticides can get into the flower buds from, if it's like just in the ground. So what we have found that Antique Rosemporium works is getting rid of these, you know, thrips that destroy your blooms, is when there's a bunch of buds and they're starting to open that time of year, that's when we spray on the top with TriStar or something. And that really can lead to some beautiful blooms. And, you know, of course we try to advocate for no spray roses. And that is, we do, you know, we are breeding for stuff that you don't have to spray for black spot, but sometimes there's just the thrips can get out of control. I don't know if it's just where we're at, or if, I don't know if you have that problem, but it's a problem we have.
Well, sometimes we do have to treat things, even though primarily we're not going to do a lot of spraying, or we're going to be as careful as we can. Sometimes diseases come around that shock us. We're living in a pandemic right now, so we understand that more than usual, and some things have to be taken care of. So, true. Yes, we do have thrips here. I didn't have them for a long time, but I'm not sure why. I was a lucky one that I got them later in my rose growing experience, but I do have them now, and they do have to be dealt with in some measure. So I appreciate that good advice. And the overwatering, you know, to me, I've always equated water to love. And so I'm the greatest, even though I've been growing roses for, you know, more than 30 years, I still love to love on them with water. So I have to be careful with my new babies that I don't overwater. So those are fabulous tips. We can all learn from those.
One more thing I will mention
is, you mentioned deadheading, and to those novices or someone that's real new to this, deadheading can be a little scary, but all that is cutting off the blooms. It's as simple as that, so it doesn't make the seed, because all that energy is going to go into the seed making, and then it can't go into the flower making. So when you see a bloom that is past its prime, just snip it off with scissors or your thumb or something, just so the energy can continue to go into the flower making. So some of our terms in the rose world are a little scary, you know, pruning, deadheading, and that kind of thing, but it's all very simple. And especially with deadheading, just if you just take off those blooms that are past their prime, you'll be good.
Absolutely. Yeah, you said it perfectly.
Well, that's all the time we have, and this has been absolutely wonderful. It's great to talk to you, and thanks for all that you're doing and all the excitement. And I'm telling you, the Antique Rose Emporium, you're so far ahead of us in the growing season. We're still dealing with a little bit of winter at night as it gets down into the 30s, and we're having to protect things. And you're posting pictures like the one you did yesterday of Penelope. Penelope, you can just tell everyone there, whoever posted that picture, just know that Penelope now went on my wish list. Absolutely beautiful picture. And now I've been reading about this rose and thinking, okay, I do need this one.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that's one of Mike's favorite. So that was almost certainly Mike. We have it planted at the gardens at Antique Rose Emporium. And, you know, that's a rose that's always in bloom. That's a big bloomer.
Why don't I have it already? I need this rose. I need this rose. So that's a Pemberton, which is really great, hybrid musk. So fragrant, ever bloomer. I don't know why I don't have it, but I will fix that problem.
Sounds good. Teresa, I appreciate you having me on, and it's my pleasure, you know, offering any tips or any advice, you know, that I could.
Well, you did a great job. And friends, we're so glad you joined us today, too. In this unusual season of our world and all that we're going through, I hope that you are safe, you are healthy, and you're able to be in your garden, even if you're just getting started. Because I know my time in the garden right now is one of the main things getting me through. So until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.